No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008 or Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's 888-627-6008 or BBS Radio 1. Today, we're not going to have a guest. I'm not allowed to say we're going to wing it because Kathleen has prohibited me from saying that. So we're going to have an organized discussion around nothing in particular. And to help me get things started, the lovely, vivacious, and always accepting Kathleen Gomez. Are you there, Kathleen?
Yes, Michael Brown, I'm here. It's such a pleasant, I look forward to this moment so much throughout the week, knowing that I'll be discussing politics with you every Sunday.
Well, and I look forward to it too, because it's the one time that you're not yelling at me. Just so you folks know, Kathleen and I have been involved in a campaign. Of course, Election Day is November 4th, and so maybe we'll talk a little bit about that today. We can't talk about the specifics of the campaign because it's my campaign, and that wouldn't be fair. But we've been very, very busy, and we're going to get back to having some very interesting guests right after the 4th of November. In fact, I talked to a very interesting lady today, an old friend who spent time in Palestine and has been over there trying to bring Palestinians and Jews and Christians together. I see today that protests have erupted again in Palestine over the death of a teenager. So we'll have her on and some other interesting people in the weeks to come, and we'll discuss we'll get back to our regular schedule of having some interesting discussions with people that are making a difference in the world. And that's really what this show is about. It's about trying to bring people together to reach a consensus so we can deal with some of the big problems that face us all, and that here in Washington, we don't seem to be able to compromise anymore on these issues, and it's really distressing. You know, we have this Congress has been the least productive Congress in the history of the United States. So there used to be a Congress called the Do-Nothing Congress, and they did more than this Congress. So I guess this Congress needs to be titled the Really Do-Nothing Congress. What do you think, Kathleen?
Well, I think so too, and it was funny because we were listening this morning to the typical news stations on Sunday, and I found it really interesting that they were talking about these groups. They were going through, like, I guess it's called, Kansas and Iowa, because there's some very interesting races taking place. And in Kansas, they have the race to replace Senator, I believe it's Pat Roberts, who's been there, I don't know, something like 50 something like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't even own a house in Kansas City. Actually lives and raised his children in Virginia. Nobody can remember what he's done. He's Republican. And now this independent has really had momentum. And so they might lose that seat to an independent, which is something no one foresaw. And then there's another one. But anyway, my point was that as they were talking, they talked, I think it was in Iowa, where the conservatives and the liberals are getting together once a week to talk about the issues. And they stated, which, see, we're just so far ahead of everybody. Everyone should just listen to this because we've been talking about this for, what, a year and a half. They yeah. talked about sitting down and finding common ground and doing it because Congress couldn't. And that was always been our purpose for the show, is that people need to start sitting down and talking to each other and making good choices and being informed. So it was just interesting because they were making a big deal about this idea, you know, on TV and, oh, this is so great, the liberals and the conservatives. And even though they may not agree, you know, they're talking. And then it was interesting, I don't know if you saw on TV, that Senator Flake, who's from Arizona, and I forget the Democrat, went on a survivor type of deal where they together, I don't know if it was 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever, they survived on an island, like just like Survivor. And it said that they had gotten really close, and then they were talking about their experience. They had gotten very close. They still didn't agree on some issues, but that they understood each other more and they respected each other's viewpoints, so it would be easy to work with each other. And isn't that what we've been saying all along?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, there used to be that. I mean, there were very close personal ties between guys like Ted Kennedy and Robert Dole. They were old friends. I think McCain and Kennedy were also friends. You know, there used to be this thing on Capitol Hill where you could agree to disagree, but that didn't mean that you know, you couldn't associate with each other and you couldn't try to come together on some bipartisan legislation. But now there's such a wedge between people. And I think that's really the bottom line, is that one, you know, once we come together and we talk to each other and we sit down and we break bread together, we realize we're not that far apart. We're not right. as far apart as we are when we sit around and imagine what the other side is thinking. And, you know, right? That's what they say about great authors and great filmmakers that, you know, now that Halloween's coming up, that do great horror, write great fiction, horror fiction, and do great movies. They leave it to your imagination, right? Alfred Hitchcock didn't really show you the blood and gore. He left it to your imagination. Stephen King leaves it to your imagination for you to decide, you know, what you think is happening. And when we leave it to our imagination in politics, I think we always decide the worst. And that's just terrible. We need to come together, and we need to talk about things so that we know what the other side is thinking, and we can try to compromise on a few things. And you know what? We'd really like to know what you're thinking. So why don't you call in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And you know, I can even suggest some topics to you, like what's going on in the Middle East or how you feel
Let's keep it about elections. I mean, the elections are coming up. It's like 10 days.
Okay. Let me rephrase. Maybe you could call in and say, Kathleen, why are you so mean? Kathleen, why are you so mean? It even rhymes. It would make a good campaign slogan. Kathleen, why are you so mean to the senator who's always so good to you?
I'd love somebody out there to explain that to me. His story. You know, like history. It's his story. You know, everyone out there get it.
Oh, my God. Now, here we go with the feminists. We have to have her story and history.
It'd be totally different. Listen, there's one thing I want to talk to people about, and this is, you know, if you're – why don't you call in to us about what's going on in your area and elections. But, you know, there's this thing that's very interesting. You know, there is an election here in D.C. where you have to vote for two candidates. For one, you know, there's two positions available, so you're going to vote for two people. But And I find it amazing if there's any other elections out there where people would rather you not vote for two to make sure that the person you want votes. And so they tell people and pressure people to say, oh, don't vote for two, just vote for one so you make sure they get in. This to me is such a sham and a disgrace on what democracy is that I find it just so disgusting. And that's where politics has gotten, that you would sit there and tell somebody, don't vote twice, just vote once. I mean, just to ensure that your person wins. If you can't stand a little competition, or, you know, you shouldn't, do you think you should run?
Well, you know, I think this is just a symptom of what goes on Capitol Hill too. You know, wasn't it Speaker Boehner that said his job was to make sure that the president didn't get anything passed? And that's what politics is becoming in this country. It's becoming, you know, it's more important to make sure the other side wins and that we don't lose than it is to make sure our side wins. I mean, it's just crazy to me, this kind of, I don't even know what you want to call it, defensive politics, where you're really trying to make sure that the other side is closed out. And rather than having, in this case, what you're talking about, a fair election with competition, you're trying to make sure that all you care about is that your guy wins. You don't care about anything else in the electoral process, whether it's fair, whether it's just, whether the voice of the people gets heard. And yeah, it's really not healthy for our democracy to do that on any level. And I think that's the problem we have in Congress right now, is that these guys are more interested in making sure that the other side doesn't get ahead, that they end up shooting themselves in the foot and nobody gets ahead.
That's right. I guess, you know, it's interesting, though, and when we were looking at the statistics over the years, right, how many people, when you have a situation where you have two seats, like 52% of the population doesn't even vote for the second because they don't understand that they have two choices, because there's two seats open for that specific election, whether it be, say, I guess the best in a city council, or, you know, I don't know of any other place that, you know, would maybe be having two candidates run for two seats. But it's an awful thing that we don't make sure we're educated and know what the situation is when we go in to vote. And anybody who would say to somebody, you know, just vote for one, don't vote for two, I'd like to sit down with them, because I'd like to understand how their mind thinks, and then sit there and try to understand how they can sit there and really promote the undoing of democracy. And these are always people who are always shouting that they're the most democratic people that there is.
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing that everybody has to realize, is that liberals and conservatives have different agendas, but they're the people that represent both those causes. That's another problem we have. The people that represent those causes are the same in terms of character and vision very often, and who they really are. And so you have good people and bad people on each side. And as soon as you get into that whole thing that the ends justifies the means, then you have a problem. You can't have a situation where you just subvert the process because you think you're right. And this happens on both sides. I mean, you know, we talk about voter suppression, for example. I love a story that I heard one time. Kathleen and I worked for Jimmy Carter. Now, Kathleen was in preschool at the time, and I had just graduated from college, but we worked for Jimmy Carter, and they used to tell this story about how there was this I had a friend from Georgia who worked with us, who told us this story about how there was this little town in Georgia, which was solidly – the state of Georgia at the time was solidly Democratic. But this little town was solidly Republican, and you had to cross over a river – to get into this town, and it was such common knowledge that the Democrats who ran the state used to take the ballot boxes and throw them off the back of the truck when they would pick them up and throw them into the river, that the Republicans started to go downstream and pull them out of the water and dry them out and take them to the county seat. And certainly Kathleen and I have both seen lots of Republican voter suppression.
I've seen a lot of Democrats.
Both sides, right, and Democrats too. So,
and let me say,
you know, it's when you subvert the process and you think it's okay because your side is right, that's right. Where the problems come in.
Well, in an instance, and I will say this, that this happened in Douglas, Arizona, and it's happened quite a few times, where you will have two candidates running for city council. One wins. He's not the one that the city wants or the so-called politicals that may be. And then all of a sudden, the next day after the election, oh, that guy won by 7? You pull out a box. Oh, my goodness. Here are 8 votes. Don't know what they are, but they actually accept the 8 votes. And then guess what? Surprise, surprise. It's 8 votes that are for the other candidate who lost. And it goes through. So, you know, it happens on both sides. It's a sham and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And there's another thing I'd really like to talk to our audience about. And that's this thing called endorsements. When you really want somebody to be elected, you don't want somebody who's been endorsed by everyone because, you know, the moment that person goes into office, guess who they owe? They owe the union or the organization or even a frickin' newspaper. They owe those people for endorsing them. So if you really, really want somebody who's going to represent you, the voter, who's not going to be beholden to anybody when they get elected, don't look at endorsements. In fact, I myself, and you and I have had this discussion and had some disagreement, I don't vote for anyone who gets endorsed. I feel like already they are, what's the word? Compromised.
Well,
that's my belief.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that I agree 100% with that, but I've got to tell you that, people. Endorsements do affect your judgment. You know, if you've been endorsed by a particular group, you're gonna have to answer when they call the phone. And money is a really bad thing in politics. And I'm all for public financing of elections. If you look at D.C., for example, when we run, we're required to get a certain number of signatures to get on the ballot, 2,000 or 3,000 signatures to qualify. Now, and that's members of either your party or registered voters. They have to, follow very specific guidelines on how each qualified elector is verified. So very often, people get 4,000 or 6,000 or 8,000 signatures to get on the ballot. And if you're having 6,000 people nominate you for a position, I think that should be enough to qualify you to get funding to run and to even the playing field. You know, we have people out there that I think you should limit the amount of money a candidate can put into his own election. You know, we have people out there that are putting hundreds of thousands of dollars of their own money into to election. A guy that ran against me last time put $200,000 of his own money into the election. He lost because money isn't everything. If you're evidently, if you're charming and exceedingly good looking, like I am, you're able to overcome those obstacles. But seriously, if I think we have to limit the way money comes into elections. I think we have to have public financing, and usually it's matching funds. So the government doesn't just hand over the money to you. They give you, an equal amount of money, usually based on how much money you've raised. And from small contributors, there's usually a limit of how much people can give. And I think that's a great idea. I think it should be set at local elections for $100. Anybody that gives you $100, should qualify. And if you raise $20,000, you should get $20,000 from the government. And I think that would be a good thing. We need to get the money and we need to get the influence out of politics, because the only people that you should be representing are the people that elected you.
Yes.
And that's it. The voters, those are the people. And that's where you get back to this whole thing about, you know, if you get two votes and you only use one, it's voter suppression. I don't care. Clear and simple. And you shouldn't have that. You should have people electing representation, because that's the way it's supposed to work. That's the way we're the elected officials from any jurisdiction are supposed to be your voice.
That's right. And I think that that's what the elected officials, and we saw that when we went up to the Senate hearing and talked to some of that staff, they become this, I mean, I wish I knew when it happened, that they know better and that they don't work for you when it's your federal taxes that pay their salary. And I don't know why we're so intimidated by the people that we elect, because they're sure they want to be in your living room. They want to shake your hand. But what, you know? But once they get into office, they know better than you. That's not the way
it
works.
Well, I think that, yeah, I think that, you know, they start thinking they were chosen by God instead of chosen by the people. And that's a problem, you know. They don't understand that they work for you. And they need to understand that. I know that every time I'm invited to go somewhere, I go, unless there's a problem, you know, unless I have a conflict, scheduling conflict or something. When kids groups invite me to go, I go. When, you know, we went to a Boy Scout pancake breakfast yesterday, because not because I just because I love Boy Scouts. I do. I was a Boy Scout, but also because I think it's my obligation when these kids invite you to come someplace that you come and you act as a role model. That's what you're elected to do. Part of what you do as an elected official, you're supposed to stand up and show young people, you know, give them a standard to aspire to. So I think that it's very important that we're the voice of the people that elect us, and not the voice of big business, not the voice of developers, not the voice of the people that have the money, but
the political machine, because that's just as bad. And yeah. I've seen the political machine work in Arizona, and it doesn't care for right or doesn't care for justice. It cares for getting the having the, you know, what is that? What is the saying? The end justifies the means.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it is to them, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. Right. And I think we have to wake up. I mean, and take the good things that the Democrats have to offer and the good things the Republicans, and try to get it back on track. Because if we start talking to one another on the grassroots level, door to door, neighbor to neighbor, whatever, I think we have a chance. But if we let these people, I mean, the one thing in being inside the Beltway is really surreal. After you've been here and you leave and you go out in the rest of the country, you know, I've been traveling a lot. I've been to Kansas and North Dakota and California and Arizona and, you know, and talk to my friends who live in New Mexico and Texas and all that. And let me tell you, you know, there's such a divide. And when you become, there's something that happens. I don't know if it's the water you drink when you come in within the Beltway, and they tend to forget their world is very small, and it's just this, it's just the halls of and the area of the government, you know, that just becomes very. They don't think about their actions and how it affects the rest of the country. They don't think of what they're doing as something that's going to impact everyone else. And what would those people think in Iowa or South Dakota or Wyoming or Arizona or Colorado? They don't think it through. And I think it's got to be a grassroots or, you know, movement that starts saying, okay, you know what? The heck with Congress and the Democrats and Republicans trying to figure out, we'll figure it out. We'll get it together. We'll work it out. We'll start talking to one another and we'll come to some kind of terms, and we're going to elect those people. When we come to them and you got somebody running, you're going to say, this is how we want you to represent us. Not how you want to, but how well we want you, and we'll elect you. And if you don't do it, we're not going to vote for you the next time.
Well, I think you know, a couple of things. I have a couple of thoughts about that. First of all, I think you're right about that. You know, there's an old saying that is pity not the ones who serve. They only get what they deserve. And that's very true of democracy. We elect these people. And so when they turn out to be terrible, we have nobody but ourselves to blame on one level. But also, I think there's another thing going on. I think that when we were young, there was a thing called being an American. I think there were a core set of values that we all agreed on. And I think those have gotten smaller and smaller and smaller over time, and that we need to get back to a place where we say, yeah, there are certain principles that we agree on that are inviolate and that we need to stand up for. You know, I know that when I was a kid, there were certain things that you stood for and that were important as Americans and that we all agreed on. You know, we certainly weren't a perfect country, and you know, the preamble to the Constitution starts out in order to form a more perfect union, and we really have been struggling to do that for more than 200 years, and we get closer and closer to it, I think, as time goes on. But in the long run, we have to agree on a certain set of principles that move us forward. And again, it gets back to your idea, for example, of the whether you're going to suppress people's second vote in order to win. You know, again, you say, what's more important? Is the process more important, or is winning more important? I personally think the process is more important, and I think there was a time when we believed that. Not that there hasn't always been voter suppression out there. There always has been, and there always will be, probably. But I think that, you know, we weren't, at least we weren't so open about it. You know, the people actually advocating it, we said, you know, the process should be allowed to take its course, and we should be allowed to, you know, voice our opinion. And I think a lot of that's gone, and that's a shame. And that's why we can't come and sit down at the table. And we need to do that. We need to sit down with each other.
And maybe it's just a church, and maybe you just invite someone that you don't think you have anything in common. And I mean, we've seen that on the show. We've invited people on that we thought, oh boy, we're not going to find anything in common with these people. And we did.
Yep. And we've invited people that won't come, like the National Rifle Association. We've had Lad Everett from an advocacy group that advocates for you know, gun control, and we've had other gun control people, but we've invited the NRA. We've been invited Ted Nugent. We've invited all these people that are pro-gun to come on, and they won't come on.
Do it. I know.
We want to get everybody's opinion out there so that we can look, if Kathleen and I can get along.
You know? Yes, especially after my stint back in my roots.
Yeah, back in Arizona. Yes. We're working on her deprogramming. We've had her here for a couple of months. We're going to turn her back into a liberal sooner or later. But, I mean, if we can get along, y'all out there ought to be able to get along. And, you know, we ought to be able to talk about things. And this is a perfect segue into tonight's song. Kathleen picked tonight's song. Certainly not the guy that has great musical taste.
From the 60s. I don't say you don't have
Beatles, the Beatles and Bob Dylan and Cole Porter and you know, the Gershwin brothers.
Creamsicles. Oh no, that was Cream. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. And this is from a guy named Pitbull.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And can I tell you, with Kathleen being close to me lately, physically close, in a general proximity, I really understand and really can empathize with a guy named Pitbull, because, you know, it really does represent some of the stuff that I've been going through with her. But we're gonna take.
Oh my God, you're so whiny. You're one of those little chihuahuas. I'm sorry. I'm not a fan.
I am.
Yes. Yep. Now, this is for all my friends out there, all my Latino friends. I miss the dancing. I miss the music. And so this is for all of you.
Yes. And please come dance your rear end back to Arizona. We'll be back in a minute.
Called Fireball.
Mr. Worldwide to infinity, you know the roof on fire. We go boogie, oogie, oogie, jiggle, wiggle, and dance like the roof on fire.
We go drink, drink, and take shots until we fall out like the roof on fire. Now, baby, get my booty naked, take off all your clothes, and light the roof on fire.
Tell them, baby, 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 baby,
I'm on fire.
I tell them, baby, 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 I'm a fireball.
And we're back.
And we're on fire.
And we're on fire. Somebody please come over here with a fire extinguisher quick.
I love that song.
Yeah, it's got a nice beat. Remember, those of you who are old enough to remember American Bandstand, you know, they used to break the records, 76, easy to dance to, good beat, didn't like the lyrics, you know.
Hey, listen. The heck with all the politicians. If you asked me, who would you want to meet? Guess who it would be?
Me.
No.
Shh.
All right, well.
Bull.
I wouldn't want to meet even Gandhi. No. I want to have one dance with Pitbull.
These days, unfortunately, but
I know. Well, you know, back in the day, but listen,
you
would.
Okay.
I want to have one dance with Pitbull. That's what I want, and I'd die happy.
Okay, Pitbull, if you're out there, please
come dance with me.
She can die.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm not sure that the one person that I would want to meet would be Pitbull, although I would say that the girl that happens to be in that video would be in the top 10. Because she's very cute. But we saw him. Kathleen and I saw Pitbull. We actually went to, it's funny, we went to the convention, Democratic convention in Charlotte, and we took a young lady who was my intern at the time and has moved up to be
your intern, your volunteer.
My right hand, Kathleen's behind me pushing me, and she's up front clearing the way for me. But she got us into this party where Pitbull, I'd never heard of Pitbull before, although when we got to the party and they started playing music, I recognized the music because my kids listened to it. But I really didn't know who he was, and boy, we lost Kathleen on the dance floor. We never saw her for the rest of the night.
So I was just trying to work my way up to the stage, you know, but it got like three deep and then I couldn't get any further.
Well, and it was a fun party. So we had a good time and he did a great job. He was really entertaining live. And so I've since become a fan of his. And so it's not, you know, it's not just John Philip Sousa that I listen to. I've updated my iPod a little bit. How do you like that? I have an iPod.
No, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh my gosh.
It's got all sorts of music on it. You'd be surprised at some of the stuff I
Bambi?
Listen to.
Bambi from Disneyland or something like that?
Look, man, when you on a star is a good song. I don't care what you say. If there are any Jiminy Cricket fans out there, oh my God, how old am I that I remember?
Very old.
Jiminy Cricket. But anyway, a great politician, Jiminy Cricket was, and a great spokesman for America. And you know what? I mean, now that we've gotten on this subject, maybe we should talk about it a little bit, because maybe that's part of the thing, is that we were more naive in those days. And just like children who look at things with great wonder, maybe we looked at the world a little more with wonder than we look at it today. You know, now that we're all tied in and we instantly know about every Ebola patient on the planet and every little thing that's going on, maybe we've lost some of our innocence. And in doing that, we've lost some of our insight. I don't know. If you're out there and you have an opinion about it, give us a call, because I'd love to know what you think about that particular thing. Have we lost something in losing some of our innocence? I don't know. But call in at 888-627-6008, and let's talk about it. So what else do you want to talk about?
All right. We talked about how I think endorsements are a part of the big issue, the problem, and how they compromise candidates once they walk into the door and they're elected. We talked about people suppressing people's votes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting because when you work on a campaign and there's other campaigns going, it's a very, very bizarre environment, isn't it? You bond with people. You get, you know, it's like a camaraderie, but competitive camaraderie. Like you're ready, you're friends with the people, but you're ready for, you know, to pull the knife out of your back at any moment too.
Well, you know, I think here we have pretty civil. We've had pretty civil election here, and I commend the other candidates for that. I really very much like the people that I've run against, and you know, I think it should be example to people out there. You don't have to trash each other. I mean, that's one of the most amazing things to me about politics, is that sometimes it gets so dirty and they say such terrible things about each other. And then the day after the election, they hug and kiss and, you know, they're like friends again. And it's just amazing. I think that's one of the things that people don't like about it, is that it seems so fake, and there's a part of it that is fake, and we should get rid of that. We should just be honest and open and accept that the people that are in part of the process, the people that are part of the process, are people of goodwill that really want to make a better world. I mean, there are very few people in politics that go in it for the money. Now, there are plenty of people in politics that make plenty of money at it and figure out ways to take money, and they want the power. But, you know, there are also a lot of people that go into it because they think they can make things better. And we ought to respect those people and support them regardless of what side of the issue they're on. And I think if we could do a little more of that, we could come together and resolve a few more things. I really do. You know, there's a certain respect that ought to go along with public office, and we really don't have that anymore because we've seen so many terrible things go on, especially here in the District of Columbia. We've certainly seen plenty of corruption, and it's sad because it's a great honor to serve. You know, it really is. And nothing feels quite as good as helping somebody or having somebody come up and say, I voted for you because I believe in you. I believe that you can make a difference. And, you know, that's a great feeling, and it's a great honor, and it should be respected on both ends. Unfortunately, some people get the power and they don't respect it. And they, in the end, they end up doing terrible things. And, you know,
And let's not forget that it's always interesting that, you know, there's so many politicos and the so-called inner circle and the so-called, you know, endorsements that come from unions or different organizations or whatever it may be. You know, it doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is how you vote, and that you do vote, and that you vote, educate, be an educated vet. I'm sorry, educated voter when you go to the polls. I mean, it's all about you. And it has nothing to do with the Sierra Club or, say, the NRA or, you know, the Green Party, whatever. It's all about what you think is going to be right for the position that these people are running for. And you have to take time. You know, don't necessarily, you know, a lot of people say, well, I know I make up my mind at going into the poll. And so a lot of people don't. And sometimes they get swayed by what somebody says here or somebody says there. And it's too bad. You should definitely take the time to find out who people are, even if there's a lot of people in a race, because they will make a difference in your life. Believe me, they will make a difference in every way. And on that, I'd like to talk about the Washington Post article that was written today about in a sense, D.C. government, and how these land, are they developers or are they based? They're developers, aren't they? That haven't paid their loans?
Yeah, they're all sorts of people. They're nonprofit groups that have banded together to do affordable housing, and they're for-profit people, and they're landlords. But there's all sorts of these people who haven't paid back their loans to the government that goes back into a thing called the Housing Preservation Trust Fund here in the district. And the Housing Preservation Trust Fund is used to provide more affordable housing. So there's millions and millions and millions of dollars missing, which means we can build less affordable housing because these people haven't paid back their loans. In some cases, they haven't made what amounts to a mortgage payment in 10 years. And they haven't or 14 years. Didn't we decide that?
Yeah, it was 14 years.
Yeah. And in some cases, they owe millions and millions of dollars. One apartment complex owes $500,000 in utility bills. Imagine, you know, not paying the phone company or the electric company $500,000. And all this money goes back in the trust fund, the Housing Production Trust Fund, and it cuts down because the trust fund is exactly what it says. It's for production of affordable housing, and it cuts down on the amount of affordable housing you can put up, and it's just terrible. And that, to a large extent, is just mismanagement by government. There's a housing project that was way behind and actually spent $130,000 out of people's security deposits. They stole $130,000 from that account, and they were way behind. And government just stepped in and took over. Now, I don't know why they're not doing more of that. We really don't need the government running this stuff, but I think that they need to foreclose on a few of these properties to send a message to these people that this is unacceptable. Right now, they send them a nasty letter.
Right. And yet we talked about...
Imagine how long you could not pay your mortgage and all you got was a nasty letter. Hell, in 90 days, they'd be taking legal action against your house.
Well, and we were also talking about the fact that when common citizens, everyday citizens have been, you know, have not had the money to pay on their loans, don't they put their houses up and you can buy them for like $37 or something like that? Am I wrong?
No, that's back taxes. They've seized houses for being delinquent on taxes, property taxes. And in one case, one terrible, terrible case of a man who was a veteran, they seized his house for a few hundred dollars in back taxes and then sold the property to what we would call a predatory lender here in the district. And in the end, the man lost his property. He was a veteran, an old man. He became homeless because what happened was the lender who gave him chances to pay tacked on thousands of dollars in legal fees. So his few hundred dollars ended up being more than $10,000, which he couldn't pay. They evicted him. They sold the property. He died during the process, and then his heirs lost all the equity they had in the property, and some guy that doesn't even live here, some corporation, I think they were from Detroit, made the money on the property, and his family, who was poor to begin with, after he had paid the property off, he owned the property 100%. And over a few hundred dollars, they lost all that money, and that's just despicable. It's despicable. Yes. And they've actually passed some laws since this one case, which I think was about 2 years ago. They passed a few laws so that that can't happen anymore. But it should have never happened in the first place. And meanwhile, while they're doing this, they're letting these guys slide. And, you know, several of these people that have been involved in these developments that haven't paid the money back are well-heeled, politically connected people. People
to
that
the city
served,
council, I would assume.
Well, to the mayor. The mayor, I mean, I don't know. One was a former council member. You're absolutely right. One was a former city council member. One was worked in the administration. I think two of them were connected to former mayors. And this isn't what's going on with the current mayor. This goes back several administrations. So it's been several mayors, at least three mayors have been, you know, at the leadership of the city while this stuff has gone on. So it hasn't even been isolated to a particular administration, but it's but it has to stop. It has to stop. And you know what happens all the time is that people threaten the government and they get away with it. And they shouldn't get away with it. They say things like, well, you know, if you foreclose on the property, then you're going to have to run it and you're going to put all these people out on the street. That's nonsense. You know, it takes courage to govern. You have to be brave every once in a while and step up to the plate and say, you know what? I'm not going to be bullied by you. You can't handle this operation properly. You're out of here. We're going to take back the mortgage just like we were a bank. A bank wouldn't put up with it. So why does the government, our government in the District of Columbia has $10 billion in resources, $10 billion every year they spend. So we are as big as any bank anywhere. And if the bank won't put up with it, why should we put up with it? We have an attorney general that has 300 lawyers. Put some of those lawyers to work on this. Consumer protection is a large part of what the Attorney General's office does here in the District of Columbia. And we should be getting some of those people. We have, you know, one thing we have in Washington, D.C. is you could not spit in the District of Columbia without hitting a lawyer, right? We got more lawyers, you know, it's funny, like – half the people I meet and I say, what do you do for a living? I'm a lawyer. We have so many lawyers in the District of Columbia, and I think it's true that we have more lawyers in this city than any city in the world, and we should put some of them on top of these lenders who take advantage, or these landlords who take advantage of the city and also take advantage of their tenants. Look, if you're taking $130,000 out of a fund that's set up, a segregated fund to hold people's security deposits, you're ripping off tenants and ripping off the city.
Yes, you are. And it's, you know, the other thing that is very, I'm pretty shocked that happens in D.C. because, you know, New York City, you know, they were waned for a while, but they do have some pretty good rent control laws that help protect tenants. And I couldn't believe that the cost of the renovation of a building is passed on to the tenant. And I asked you, well, what equity do I get for paying off the bills of a landlord to renovate and upgrade his building? But that's basically what it is.
Yeah, you don't. You don't get any equity. You don't get equity when he sells the property, which might happen right after you pay for the renovations.
That's
you know?
Right.
And it's funny because you do get equity if he converts the building. If he converts the building, you know, from a rental unit to condos, then you do. There are provisions that allow you to buy at subsidized rates, and he has to make certain accommodations, and we have to have a negotiated agreement. But this other loophole that they've got where they can put in a hardship petition to raise the rent because the plumbing and the electrical and everything else needs to be upgraded you know, because they've let it dilapidate, you know, you don't get anything for that. And I own a home that was built, gosh, my home's 80 years old. And when the electrical or the plumbing or something needs to be upgraded, I got to pay for that. I don't get to, you know, I don't get to do anything to, I don't get any break on that. I'm not sure. You probably could write it off on your taxes, some of it. But that's quite a bit different. And these guys actually get the improvements paid for. And there's also a thing in the district that you can, get an automatic 2% increase over the consumer price index every year in rents, which can over 20 years triple the rent on an apartment. And that's not rent control.
No.
That's making it easy for the landlord. And we've got to, and there's just been legislation that's been proposed to change that. And you know where it comes from? It comes from the fact that people are screaming about this during an election year. And that's, you know, I know you say it all the time, Kathleen, but I hope people are listening. You got to get out there, especially in election year. And the first thing you got to do is vote so these people know that they'll be held accountable. Because if you don't vote, then there's nothing you can do to hold them accountable. And then you need to make an issue out of the things that are important to you. You know, the reason that people that we cut education more than we cut Social Security is very simple. Old people vote, young people don't. So the issues that are, you know, we've talked on this show about student loans, and it's 7:54, so we can't get Kathleen started on this.
Yes, don't get me started.
This is one thing that drives her crazy, and it drives us all crazy. You know, I pay, I'm going to be very candid. I have two kids in college, and one of them I pay $30,000 a year for, just for her tuition and room and board, $30,000 a year. And when she gets out of college, that's my wife and I have paid $120,000 for her to get her bachelor's degree, and she's going to be $20,000 in debt on top of it because we make her take out a $5,000 loan every year, and she has a $7,000 a year academic scholarship. So she's gotten $28,000 on top of the $120,000 that we put in, and she's going to be She's going to be $20,000 in debt. That's $168,000 for a bachelor's degree.
And it doesn't.
That's crazy.
And it doesn't even ensure that you get a job. And how many people have we met? And let me tell you, it's getting me. I am so angry. We're going to have to dedicate a show and a movement to this. I was speaking to a very young man who was working for a candidate outside the early voting polls. As respectful and as nice as can be. And he's got to commute 2 hours to Howard because about 2 hours, you would say, maybe even in traffic, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours, because he can't afford the housing. Now, that is ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous that this student who is coming an engineer or something, I mean, this guy is not fooling around, but universities and colleges are charging so much because they're all based on numbers and making a profit instead of their goal being to educate the next generation of taxpayers, the next generation of politicians, doctors, whatever, social workers. They're not interested in it anymore. What they want is money, money to buy other real estate, money to have to do whatever. I mean, before we go, I want to talk about this one time. I would have everybody who can, who has a kid going to college, to sit down and read exactly what your costs are, because my son found that every year he's being charged $250 to go into a fund to help veterans. But that $250 is part of the loan that he takes to pay for college. Why can't the university do that on their own? Why are they saddling that students with this type of cost only, which is going to increase and increase as the years go off because he can't pay the loan right away?
Well, and that's absolutely true. Veterans should get scholarships. I think every veteran should get a scholarship. But you know what? Like the GI Bill, every veteran should get a scholarship. But why should the kids pay for it? Why don't we pay for it? Why doesn't the government pay for it? Uh-oh, we're getting off on this terrible tangent, yes, and we're going to have to go. But I want to say to everybody tonight, thanks for listening. I'm going to give Kathleen the last word because she never gives me a choice. She takes the last word anyway. But I want to tell you that next week, it's 2 days before Election Day on Sunday. So right, what we're going to do is we're going to play one of our better shows that's been archived. We'll choose it over the week. And we hope that you will all tune in the following week when we'll do another show on statehood. And we'll try
the outcome of the election.
and the outcome of the election. And we will also start having interesting guests again. So you don't have to listen to Kathleen pick on me. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in next week because we've had some interesting shows, and we'll make sure that the show that's played is a good one. Thanks
for listening. And not just you and me talking.
Right. And so, Kathleen, you get the last word.
I would just say to everyone, please go out and vote. Please educate yourself. Everyone's got early voting. There's no reason why you can't vote, and you should. And let's please send some positive energy our way. We need all the support and all your prayers to make sure that, and I'm going to say it, that Michael D. Brown wins the election that he's running for, because if there's anyone that is only beholden to the voter, it's him, and I hope you all wish him well. Thank you. And remember, we're on fire.
We're on fire. Okay, so somebody come put us out, and we'll see you in a couple weeks. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.